Everyone, it is so great to be able to learn together, to be able to prepare for Shabbos Kodesh together. Please God, it'll be a healthy Shabbos, a Shabbos where we're all safe and doing well. And again, as I always say, while this is nice, and it's so nice to see so many familiar faces, it's not the same. And I look forward, I yearn, I crave for the day when you and I can be back in person, we could be learning together. Learning was never meant to be a one-sided conversation. It was meant to be a chavrusa. It was meant to be a dynamic between teacher and students, and all of that is missing here. So I look forward to the time when we can be back together, when we can learn, when we can see each other, we can schmooze with each other. I could ask you how you're doing, how your kids are, how your grandkids are. But alas, we don't live in a perfect world in many regards, so we'll just chalk this up as in addition to that imperfection. Okay, with that said, let's get right in, as is our minhag here on Friday mornings. By the way, I love it. Three ideas, 30 minutes, energize us for Shabbos. Here we go. Idea number one is comes from, obviously, the Parsha. Parsha is Parsha Shlach. Moshe Rabbeinu sends the Meraglim into the land of Israel. Of course, we know the story. The Meraglim come back, and it is catastrophic. Idea number one is to analyze the difference between how the story plays out in our Parsha and how the story plays out in Sefer Devarim when it recounts the story of our Parsha. And it appears in the very first chapter of Sefer Devarim. And you will notice that there are three significant differences. There are a lot more, but we'll do it in broad categories, that there are three significant differences between our Parsha and Sefer Devarim. What are those three differences? Here we go. Right off the bat, difference number one that you will notice is whose initiative was it to send the Meraglim into the land of Israel? The pasuk in our parsha says, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor." Excuse me. Hashem says to Moshe, "Shlach lecha anashim vayasuru es eretz Kanan." Moshe, you send spies into, or again, spies is a bad word, but send spies into the land of Israel. If you look in Sefer Devarim, you will notice a very different phraseology for whose initiative it is. Vatikrvun Eli kulchem vatomru. Moshe says explicitly that it was the Jewish people who approached him, vatomru, and they said to me, nishlecha anashim lefaneinu v'yachparu lanu asaretz. Moshe Rabbeinu, are you okay? We have this great idea. We want to send spies, scouts, into the land of Israel to check out the land of Israel. So it's explicit. Our parsha, it's about the Meraglim, right? Hashem initiates it, and he says, send the Meraglim. In Sefer Devarim, it's a completely different narrative. It's the Jewish people who approach Moshe Rabbeinu and say, we think this is something that we need. Difference number two is the identity of these individuals. If you'll notice in the parsha that you're going to read tomorrow, an enormous amount of real estate is given to the identity of the Meraglim. First of all, it explains who they are. It says, Kol Nasi, tells us that they're Nasiim. It says, Kulam Anashim Roshei B'nei Yisrael Hema. It tells us that they are the heads of their department, so to speak. And then it goes on and it explicitly tells us every single one of their names. We know exactly who these 10 individuals, who these 12 individuals are. When you get to Sefer Devarim, it's very different. The pasuk in Sefer Devarim says, Va'akach Mikem Shneim Asar Anashim, That's it. I'm going to take 12 people, ish echad la'shevet, one from each shevet. It doesn't tell us their names. It doesn't tell us that they're big tamidei chachamim. It doesn't tell us that they're important people. It tells us nothing about them, just that they're 12 individuals. Why in Parsha Shlach do we get a lot about who these Meraglim were? And in Sefer Devarim, we get almost nothing. Total radio silence from the Torah about who they are. And last, and obviously most important, and not least, is the response to the Meraglim. Right? When the Meraglim come back from their journey in our Parsha, whose fault is it? I want you to read the Torah tomorrow, or pay attention to the reading of the Torah tomorrow, and I want you to wonder, who does the Torah place the blame for this episode on? And it is clear as day. It's not, you don't need a PhD in Torahology, right? It's Orsmicha, otherwise known, right? It's very clear exactly whose fault it is. It's Vayesperu lo. The Meraglim start saying, we came to the land, it was too big, it was fortified, we can't go up. Lo nuchal la'alos ela'am ki chazak mimenu. We can't go up because it's impossible. They're too big for us, right? And if you read the Parsha, you blame the Jewish people, but you really blame the Meraglim, right? I mean, it's the Meraglim who come back. They give that negative report about the land of Israel. The Jewish people are along for the ride. I don't blame them, but it really places the blame at the feet of the Meraglim. When you come to Sefer Devarim, it is totally different. Let me read for you the pasuk in Sefer Devarim. Vayikhu biyadam mipri haaretz, they took the fruit of the land. Vayoredu eleinu vayashuvu osanu davar lemor, they came back. And what do they say? Tov haaretz asher anai nosein lanu. What did the Meraglim say according to Sefer Devarim? They said it's a great land. It's a beautiful land. Tova haaretz asher adonai Eloheinu nosein lanu. This is a magnificent land. It's got deserts and it's got trees and right whatever it is, right? The fruits and it's an amazing land. Velo avisem la'alos. But then Moshe looks at the Jewish people and he says, but you, Klal Yisrael, you, the Jewish people, refused to go up vatamru sp adonai Eloheichem, and you rebelled against Hashem. Whose blame is the story of the Meraglim in Sefer Devarim? It's not the Meraglim. It's not the spies. Because the spies, all they said according to the book of Devarim is, Tova haaretz asher adonai Eloheinu nosein lanu. It's a great land. Whose fault is it in Sefer Devarim? Va lo avisem lalos. Moshe looks at the Jewish people and says, avisem, from the word refused, right? You refused to go up. And the blame is placed squarely at the feet of the Jewish people. So here you have three differences, significant differences, by the way, between the narrative in our parsha and the narrative in Sefer Devarim. And I want to offer the following suggestion. Why for these discrepancies? The answer is that our parsha plays a very different function than Sefer Devarim. Our parsha is recollecting something historically. It's telling us exactly how it happened. The spies went, they came back, who are the spies, right? The same way you would write a history book, a very dry history book, you would try to recount as many details as possible. So you tell us the names of the spies. You would tell us how the conversation initiated itself. You would tell us exactly when they came back and what the conversation looked like. You would tell me as many details as possible. But we know that history is never accurate. That's a spoiler. And I wrote about my book club this week. One of the things we learn about in our book club is how history can be told through many different lenses. Right, so you and I could see the exact same story happen, but if you read the New York Times and I'm reading the Wall Street Journal, we're going to get a very different story of a particular event. The Torah is no different. Torah is not just a history book. It's really not a history book. Torah is a book of ethics. It's a book of morals. So when you come to Sefer Devarim and Moshe Rabbeinu is preparing a new generation for coming into the land of Israel, right? Don't forget, the generation in our parsha is not the generation who we're going to read about in Sefer Devarim. It's a totally new generation. Moshe Rabbeinu is not interested in recounting every single detail. That's not his goal in Sefer Devarim. We already know about that from Parsha Shlach. Moshe Rabbeinu is interested in teaching a lesson. And what's that lesson? It's about achrayus. It's about taking responsibility. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu looks at the people who are about to go into the land of Israel and says, I don't care what role the Meraglim played in convincing you that the land of Israel was a bad land. Ultimately, the responsibility falls on your shoulders. Ultimately, it is your decision whether to follow the Meraglim or whether to not follow the Meraglim. And that's why in Sefer Devarim, we don't mention the Meraglim at all. They're almost absent from the story because it's irrelevant at that point. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't blame your misfortunes on the actions of 12 people. You know what you have to do? You have to take responsibility for yourself. You have to man up. You're going into a land. Don't forget, in the desert, everything was handed to them on a silver platter. Who has to take responsibility? They were Kolo people, right? All of a sudden, they're going to the land of Israel. They're going to have to farm. They're going to have to work for a living. They're going to have... Moshe says, time to man up and take responsibility. Stop blaming other people for everything that's wrong in your life, but take responsibility for yourselves. And I think that's a beautiful idea. I think it's very relevant for our day and age where our initial reaction is always to blame someone else, right? Think about our lawyered up society, right? Where our natural reaction is, who else can I blame for something that went wrong, right? The second something goes wrong, you always say, oh, but it's because this person was mean to me that I acted that way. Says the Torah, no. Ultimately, we bear that responsibility. We bear the obligation for that responsibility in our own. And if we had more time and we were developing this, I would tell you that that's pretty much all of Sefer Bereishis. It's about taking responsibility. Whether it's the story of Cain and Hevel, whether it's the story of Adam and Chava, when Adam says it's Chava's fault and Chava says it's the Nachash's fault, and Hashem says, I'm not playing this blame game with you. You each have to take responsibility for your own actions, for your part in what went wrong. That's the story, perhaps, of the discrepancy in the descriptions between Parsha Shlach and Sefer Dvarim. Parsha Shlach is a historical recounting. Sefer Dvarim is trying to teach us a lesson. It's about to teach us a lesson about autonomy, about what it means to grow up as a people. And that means ultimately taking responsibility for our actions. That's idea number one. Idea number two comes from the end of the parsha. Mereishis ariso sechem, tinu ladonai truma ledoro sechem, the mitzvah of challah. Now challah, we refer to challah as like, you know, can you pass the challah? The challah tastes really good tonight. The challah is a little bit too doughy tonight. That's not what challah really is. Challah is the dough that you remove from the bread that you have to give to the kohen. It's the portion of the bread. And anyone who's ever made challah know that it's called hafrashas challah. You remove a certain amount of the bread from your dough. You burn it off. Nowadays, back then, you would give that to the kohen. What's the reason for hafrashas challah? Why is there a specific mitzvah, specifically while you're making dough, to take a little bit off, and again, for nowadays, for our purposes, give it to the Kohen, but what we do is we burn it off. I want to share with you an interpretation from the Rabag. Rabag Rav Levi ben Gershon, 14th century France. So if you've never learned Rabag, it's a very fascinating structure that he does it. The very first part of his commentary on the Parsha, he goes word by word. Not particularly exciting. But at the end of his commentary on the Parsha, he usually gives 10 moral lessons that he believes you should learn from the Parsha. He calls it HaToela, which means like the purpose of teaching all of this. And he goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it's great. Because if you're looking for like a Cliff Notes version of what I should be learning ethically from the Parsha, the Rabag is going to be your man. So on Hafrashas Challah, the Rabag says that there are two reasons why we take challah. Number one is to reinforce a sense of Emunah in Hashem, a faith in God, that even our most basic needs, like bread, is a gift from Hashem. Number two, says the Rabag, Ki Hashem Yisala Ratza Shia Lakoanim Pnai La'isek HaTorah V'la'amod Al Sodoseh. The second reason is to create a bond between the Jewish people and the Kohanim. Don't forget, the Kohanim were unable to engage in farming. And so they had no means to put food on their table. Who were they reliant on? They were reliant on the Jewish people. They were reliant on Klal Yisrael. And so we gave them a certain amount from us so that they wouldn't have to bother themselves with farming. They could be involved in more spiritual pursuits. So one is faith in God, that all of our blessings are from God. Number two is a gift to the Kohen so the Kohen can learn Torah, he can be involved in spiritual pursuits. I'd like to suggest that these two reasons of the Rabag are not two different reasons, but they actually complement one another. In other words, there are two sides of the coin. Reason number one is that we realize that everything comes from Hashem. That Hashem is the source of all of our blessings, whether it's the food on our table, to our talents, to our capabilities. We spoke about this at length in my Tehillim class yesterday, which I realized I have not put up online, but it'll be up online after this. Right? So lesson number one was it's all from Hashem. But lesson number two is what do we do with those blessings? What do we do with those blessings? Do we keep them to ourselves? Or do we share it with others, right? Do we use those blessings simply to increase my own name and my own ego and my own wealth and the size of my house? Or do I use those blessings to encourage and promote learning and spreading of Torah to help other people as well? And so Hashem gives us the bread. He gives us that blessing. What does he tell us to do? He says, I want you to give it to the Kohen. I want you to use every gift and every talent and every blessing that I give you only to share it in an ability to help other people as well. And in this particular case, it's to help the perpetuation and the spreading of Torah. There is a fascinating Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah when Hashem, the times of Mashiach, come and all of a sudden the nations of the world come and they say, L'misha asak b'yavo v'yitol scharo. Hashem says, anyone who learned my Torah, come and take your reward for that Torah. So the nations of the world each line up one by one, and God says, okay, b'maya saktem. right? What did you do to promote my Torah in the world? And they're going to reply, oh, we created marketplaces and baths and gold and silver, and we only did it for the sake of the Jewish people. And God's going to look back at them and he's going to say, you're a fool. That's not why you did it. You did it for yourselves. You did it for your own desires. You did the marketplaces for nefarious purposes. You bathed yourselves for indulgence. You didn't do it because of the Jewish people. Ask the Brisker Rav, right, that these nations, they're not making up a last-minute story, right? They're not just making excuse. What Hashem is telling them is that in the grand scheme of things, what you really are is you're telling the truth, that you did make all the bridges and all the baths and all the money, all for the Jewish people, right? You just didn't realize it. You just didn't realize that you were doing it for that purpose. Says the Rabbag, that's the purpose of Challah, right? That first we believe that everything comes from Hashem. Every single gift I have, from my talents, to my capabilities, to the blessings in my life, it's all from Hashem. And the challenge of Hafrashas Challah, says the Rabbag, is what do you do with those blessings? Do you use it for your own selfish pursuits, like the nations of the world and the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, right? Or do you view all of them as a means to an end, rather than the end itself? And so lesson number one was about taking responsibility. The beautiful contrast in our Parsha between Parsha Shlach and Sefer Dvarim. Lesson number two is about what do we do with the blessings in our lives, right? We live in an unprecedented time in world history, as I always talk about. I think I even spoke about it last week. We live in an unprecedented time of religious freedom, of opportunity, of blessing, of affluence, of longevity, right? This is unprecedented in world history. That Jews have had the luxuries, despite all the challenges, the luxuries that you and I have had. The mitzvah of Hafrashas Challah, according to the Rabbag, is what do we do with those blessings? How are we using them? Are we using them simply to build myself a bigger house and a nicer car and, right, to build my ego and my name and my brand? Or am I doing it to contribute to the ultimate brand? And that's Hashem and his kavod and his glory in this world. That's idea number two. Idea number three is my favorite idea in the entire Parsha. And that is the story of the Meraglim. The Meraglim come back and they say, Moshe Rabbeinu, I know you sent us into the land of Israel, and it's one of those most dramatic and calamitous scenes in the entire Torah. And I challenge you tomorrow that when you read the Torah, don't just listen, but really try to close your eyes and envision what that must have been like. God's been telling the Jewish people for generations that this is the chosen land. This is the Mecca, so to speak, right? And all of a sudden, these 12 spies go, they come back, and you see them like riding off in the distance. They're coming back slowly, and all the Jewish people start gathering around, and there's a murmur in the camp, and they're so excited, and there's an anticipation, and they can't wait to see what these 12 individuals are going to say about God's chosen land. And finally, these 12 individuals come, and they all hover around, and you know what they say? It's a great land, but Efes ki az ba'aretz. Yeah, you know what? The people there, their biceps, their muscles, they're like really big, and their guns, and they're strong, and arim b'tzuros g'dolos ma'od, and they're fortified, and like, it's really not going to be as comfortable living circumstances as you think they are. And then they say, lo nuchal lalos, like, we can't go up. I don't know what God's been talking about for all these years, but it's not for us. And if you pause the scene right there, it is such a mind-bogglingly sad scene. The Jewish people were so excited. There was such an anticipation. And all of a sudden, just like that, deflates the energy out of the entire room. All of a sudden, Kalev sends the nervousness, the reticence of the Jewish people, and he jumps up. And he says, Vayas Kalev, and he silences the whole people. And again, you have to envision the scene, hundreds of thousands of people sitting around. And Kalev says, stop, Vayas Kalev. And you anticipate at that moment in time, almost like a dramatic court scene. Think like a few good men. You can't handle the truth, right? That's not, right? And you envision Kalev to say, point by point, no, they're not strong. No, the cities aren't as big as you think they are. Yeah, we have better weapons. Don't worry. That's not what Kalev does. Kalev says, Alo na'ale v'yarashnu ata. Kalev says, we're going to go do it. Ask the Esh Kodesh. That's a weird response. The Meraglim came back and they listed every single reason why it's not going to work. They made a court case. They outlined it, right? They made their argument. to the judge. And what do we, and Kalev gives us no response. He doesn't say anything. All he says is, Alona Aleh. We are going to get up and we are going to do it. So what is this talking about? Says the Piyazetz Narav, the Yesh Kodesh, the Holy Yesh Kodesh, that what Kalev responded was, you guys said it is completely illogical for us to go into the land of Israel. You know what? You're right. It is illogical for us to go into the land of Israel. It doesn't make any sense. It is filled with uncertainty. I don't know how it's going to be. I can't give you all the answers. But despite all of that, alo na'aleh. Despite all of that, we're going to get up and we're going to do it. Kalev doesn't undermine the Meraglim's arguments because he agrees with them. There was every reason not to go into the land of Israel. And yet, Kalev said, we're going to do it anyways. In the words of the Yesh Kodesh, I'll read you from the English translation. This is the faith that is required of Jew, of every Jew. Even when we don't see any logical or natural avenue for salvation, we must believe that God, who is above the limits of nature, will save us. So when the Meraglim come back and say, lo nuchal la'alos, we can't go, Kalev says, no, alo na'aleh, we are going to go. And even if it doesn't make sense, and it's illogical, and it's uncertain, and there's every logical reason to tell me why not, we're going to do it anyways. Alo na'aleh says, even though it's so daunting, let's get up, and let's jump through those walls, break through those walls, and do it anyways. And if you think about this beautiful insight of the Yesh Kodesh, no idea greater captures the narrative of the Jewish people of the last 2,000 years than these two words of alo na'aleh. It doesn't make sense, but we're going to do it anyways. And so if you think about it, when the nations of the world, and again, I referenced my book club. So if when the nations of the world, 100 plus years ago, 120 years ago, right? If you would have told the nations of the world that we're going to make a state for the Jews in the Arab Middle East, they would tell you, doesn't make sense. Here are 15 reasons why not to. And you know what the Jewish people did? We did just that. We made a state in an Arab Middle East. Right? When conqueror after conqueror came along and said, you know what, this land, I know everyone wants it, but we don't really know why. You can't really plant anything there. It's in the desert. It's not really conducive to making things grow and flourish. You know what the Jewish people said? Hit me with it, right? Give us the land and let's see what we can do. And what has the Jewish people accomplished over the last 70 plus years? Right? Think about from desalinization, water, to startup nation, to agriculture. I mean, it's mind-boggling what Israel has produced in a land that for 2,000 years, nothing was able to grow. Nothing was able to grow. You know why? Because when everyone else said, you can't do it, when everyone else said, lo nuchal la'alos, we can't go up, the Jewish people said, alo na'aleh, we're going to do it anyways. And we're going to shatter those walls. And when people doubted in the aftermath of the Holocaust, or at various other points in history, that Torah could survive and confront modernity, and not die out when it confronts modernity, but thrive and survive, right? Survive and thrive. Everyone said, that can't be. Think about all the movements that have come, all of the people over the last hundreds and hundreds of years who said, you got to get with the time. Torah is archaic, it's antiquated. It doesn't solve the problems of modernity. We have to adapt and bend Torah to meet modernity. And there were always a group of Jews that said, no, alo na'aleh, we're gonna do it anyways. We're gonna build Torah institutions, even despite the challenges of what the modern world has to say. And so in the aftermath of the utter annihilation of European Jewry, of all the great Torah centers, right, there were individuals that came to America and that came to Israel, whether it's the Panovich Arav in Israel, who went to a place in Bnei Brak, which was barren, and said, I'm gonna build one of the world's great Torah institutions here, whether it was Aaron Cutler, who went to Lakewood, which was no man's land, which is why he went there. There was nobody there. It was far away from everything else. And both of those individuals said, you know what, we're going to build enormous Torah institutions. Alo na'aleh. You say it can't be done. You say America is that trefa medina, but we're going to build Torah institutions here anyways. And so alo na'aleh, more than any other mentality, more than any other sentiment, captures the mindset of the Jewish people of 2,000 years. That when others see impossibilities and insurmountable hurdles, our people say, we are going to do it anyways. Let's go make it happen. So we shared three ideas. We got a few minutes left. Let's summarize. We shared three ideas this morning. Idea number one was that beautiful insight, the difference between Parsha Shlach and Sefer Dvarim. The whole notion that the story of the Meraglim is not about blaming others, but it's about taking responsibility for ourselves and our own actions, our own destiny, our own future, what we have called radical responsibility, right? I have to take full responsibility and ownership over who I am and what I want to become, and I can't blame it on other people anymore. Idea number two was the beautiful idea of the Ralbag, Hafrasha Shchala. Why do we be Mafresh Chala? Number one is to recognize that everything we have comes from Hashem. And number two is to challenge ourselves. What do we do with those blessings? Who do we share it with? Are we generous with it? Who are we giving it to? How are we sharing it? That was the beautiful idea of the Ralbag. And last, but certainly not least, the great, holy Piyaz Etzner Rebbe, the Yesh Kodesh, this beautiful insight of Alo Na'aleh. Kalev doesn't answer point by point the argument of the Meraglim because he agreed with them. There was every reason not to go to the land of Israel. Lo nuchal lalos. Kalev, there was a part of them that said, you're right. It is insurmountable. And it does seem impossible. And it is daunting. But Alo Na'aleh. To be a Jew means that when we see walls, we smash through those walls. We jump over them, we go around them, but we never view an obstacle as standing in our way. That has been our history, and it continues to this very day. If you think about the modern narrative of the land of Israel, great individuals like Eli Beer, who thought to himself, you know what, I'm going to create a volunteer ambulance service, which is not just going to employ Jews, but Arabs, and it's going to be a great melting pot of Israeli society, all for the betterment of each other and helping. You would have told him, you're out of your mind, Eli. You're crazy. Right, ambucycles, you would have told him he's crazy. And you know what Eli Beer said? Great, I'm crazy, let me do it anyways. Right? And I could count hundreds and hundreds of stories, and we all know those stories, of individuals, whether it's the Jews coming from Ethiopia, or the Jews coming from Russia, or American Jews making Aliyah. I could tell you every reason not to. I could tell you every reason why it was insane for Jews from Ethiopia to walk through the desert to Sudan, to get on a plane, and to go to a land that they had never... The whole thing made no sense. But that's a Jew. Is to be Alo Na'aleh, that when others see impossibilities and insurmountable hurdles, our people say, let's go, let's do it, let's make it happen anyway. So, three ideas, 30 minutes, hopefully that'll give you some discussion points, something to think about at your Shabbos table, and as always, I want to wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos, a safe Shabbos, and ultimately a Shabbos filled with lots and lots of simcha. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos. I'm going to mute everyone now so that we can wish each other a good